This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Matt the Miz Mizzler on the other side, doing a bang up job as always, Miz.
Appreciate it, Sam.
And it is time for the MGO Blog Roundtable. The crew comes in, we talk about the week that was in Michigan athletics. We have our guy, I call him the Venerable One, none other than Craig Ross. How you doing this morning, Craig?
I'm doing fine.
Good to see you. Mm-hmm. And Brian Cook, who, I mean, they just, I mean, your kids just keep just like, Daddy, here, let me hit you.
Well, you know, that's it's life. Craig, I walked in and Craig said,
oh, you're healthy, Daddy? Here, take some of this.
Craig walked in and said, you sound terrible. And I'm like, I don't tell you that every week. Why you tell me that every week?
Well, I was trying to be empathetic because have been sick all winter, all right, it feels like.
I have been.
And I'm sorry.
It's been, this one's not as bad as the other one. So.
Yeah, it's like, take that, Daddy. That's what that is. Take that, Rutgers. Man, guys. You know, 17-0 heading into that game at the rack, and then you find out in pregame that Isaiah Livers isn't going after feeling like, you know, seeming like he was trending toward playing. And he expected to play. Juwan made that clear. He said he expected to play. He wanted to play. I saw him limping. And I said, we're going to hold you out, which was a gutsy call on his part, but one that wound up working out because he rested his best offensive player and he got the win.
Yeah, and he had his only active forward foul trouble for the whole game and still managed to pull it out. So that's a gut check right there.
Plus you had X in foul trouble.
That's true.
I mean, and they somehow managed to win it. I mean, I think in the first Rutgers game, we just got demolished on the boards.
Yeah.
And that was clearly a point of emphasis coming into this game. And we got beat again, but it wasn't nearly to the extent that the first game was. And the reality is Rutgers is a terrible shooting team. I mean, and some of the shots they made in this game were ludicrous. They banked in a 20-footer.
Yeah.
They threw some trash out that went.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, there was a half a dozen shots that had no right going in.
There was that guy posting up against Castleton who threw it from the floor and that went in, and I was like.
Yeah, I mean, and mentioning those shots because after the game, Steve Peichel was talking about, hey, we missed a lot of open looks. You know,
like, you didn't.
He was like, we had some open looks we missed. They were very good. I'm not displeased with the shots we got.
He just gotta say that because that's not true at all.
I just felt like, okay, even if that's true, the shots that you did make that were ridiculous kind of balanced out the good looks you got that you didn't make.
I mean, if he considers like a pull up 18-footer an open look that they should make, then okay, they got some of those, but like, no, I mean, open threes from what, 25% shooters, like, you don't expect those to go down. Like,
yeah, I guess the thing that you know gets me about this team is he keeps finding different guys to step up. So, you know, we saw Brandon Johns, you know, have that little run there, back to back.
He had a good game against Indiana.
Yeah, and a good game against Indiana too, but the back to back career highs, a good game against Indiana. Austin Davis is their best post player. He's their best post player. On offense. But he's their best post player. So it's like, who saw that coming? And then last night, you got to go back to Colin Castleton, and the guy comes in and gives him 10 strong minutes.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I don't think there's a reason that he shouldn't get all of the minutes where you need a guy on the wing. It's not a great fit, but he brings you some rebounding. He brings you some shot blocking. He brings you... Like, they tried to drive him a couple times, and that didn't work. And he was an excellent off-ball shot disruptor. So that's something that, you know, Adrian Nunez is not bringing to the table. And then he's able to power through contact, get an and one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some work he got done there. And I think that if there's a need for minutes from a number four guy at the 3 and 4, it's got to be Castleton going forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, Castleton really was – to some extent the difference last night, because we were down, I think, 9 points when he came in the game, and then had the N1, had a rebound, got made both ends of a 1-and-1, and he was very important in cutting the gap and turning the game around. So I agree that, that was good. I mean, it's so odd, because this game is odd because you had early in the game, I thought Dave DeJulius was terrible, made one of the worst passes in the history of basketball that went
at least they only did one of those this time, yeah, instead of three.
You know what I liked was immediately upon that happening, Juwan called a timeout. It was like that pass goes for a run out, timeout, right? Which to me is how timeouts should be used, and they're not often used that way. I mean, let's talk about this right now, not wait till the... And it was like 12 seconds from the 4-minute, you know, break. Mm-hmm. And then DeJulius later tried this absurd turnaround jump shot, got blocked, went for a run out the other way. But then in the second part of the game, he was so good. I mean, he played good defense. He hit a corner three that was key. He's working on this floater. I asked him last week about that floater, you know, whether it was instinctive or something he worked on. And he said, you know, that's interesting. I've been working with Howard Eisley on that. Because he said that it's easier to make that shot when you balance with both feet. And he said people tend to come off that shot with one foot as opposed to staying balanced with both feet. And I thought that was really interesting, something I'd never thought about. And he did make a couple of those floaters, and he was balanced with his feet when he shot
it. Yeah, he could hit them straight on. He could hit them from the baseline. I mean, it's just...
It's an unusual skill, but it's one that he, in fact, he's working on.
And as a smaller guy, you got to have. Yeah. I mean, if you want to be an effective... Yeah. Really effective offensive player, I think is one of the things that makes Cassius so lethal, is that his mid range, his floater is super tough. But let's kind of look big picture with this team, because we've seen the defense get a lot better, and for all of the, you know, this is a little nod to John Teske, for all of the criticism
he had
of him offensively, defensively, dude, I mean, he's... His presence is still there. So they've rounded into some form defensively. Offensively, well, there is some ebb and flow there. I thought they were coming off their best offensive game of the conference slate anyway against Indiana, where everything seemed to be going.
Well, that's because Indiana played the dumbest defensive scheme I've ever seen. Like, they just hard-hedged everything for 40 minutes against Xavier Simpson, and Xavier Simpson had 11 assists and one turnover. And, you know, that understates the problem, because how many hockey assists did Simpson have where he passes to one guy who passes to another guy, and then Eli Brooks has a wide open lane. And Michigan knew from the jump they were going to get a hard hedge the whole game, immediately blew it up, and Archie Miller just kept doing it. Like, if there's one school in the country that should be firing their guy right away
and hiring
John Beilein, it's Indiana.
We looked at it, you know, because I remember after the game where folks were like, man, all these guys are getting to the basket. Michigan is, they're a better dribble drive team. Not quite. Yeah. This is opponent specific. But still, I mean, they hit a couple of open looks early.
Yeah.
Created leverage that way. Great ball movement. And then a lot of guys had leverage going to the basket in that game and took advantage of it. They were really good inside the arc in a game where, like I mentioned, they were hitting those open looks from three, but they didn't go crazy with it. They still only shot 17 threes in that game.
Well, yeah, that's because they were 18 of 22 at the rim.
Right. That's what I mean. But, you know, you know how it goes. You start having some success, and then some of these teams, and Michigan definitely has fallen victim to this in the past. They just go nuts from putting up a bunch of threes because they've been hitting them. In this game, they stayed committed to getting in the lane, and they did so successfully.
But when there's a wide open boulevard to the hoop, you take it.
I mean, I thought this was Michigan's best game of the season.
Indiana. Okay.
Because the ball movement was spectacularly good. I mean, they had good shots, which they passed up for better shots over and over. It was a very unselfish game where the ball moved. Brian's right. The Indiana defense was idiotic. But the truth is that they can't play defense anyway because they did some other – they tried to do occasional other things in the game. Occasionally they tried to switch off the ball screens. That didn't work because they were falling all over themselves. You know, they got killed off dribble drives when there were no ball screens. Occasionally they soft hedged. That didn't work either because they ran into each other.
Right.
I mean, and their backcourt can't play man at all. You've got three guys, Durham, Finnessy, and Green, who are terrible defenders. And if you watch them in slow-mo, I shouldn't say that, but I watched this game very closely, and they're flat-footed. They're just standing there flat-footed. They're not moving their feet. And that's got to be something to do with coaching. But
it killed them. It killed their transition game because Michigan did a great job of getting back.
Yeah, with one or two occasions.
When they had to. And then Michigan was so efficient offensively that there just weren't as many chances to get up and down as I'm sure they would have liked. They wanted one fast break point in that game.
Yeah, and Indiana, speaking of transition, is wretched in transition defense. I mean, they have no idea what they're doing. And so, it's hard to understand because they looks like that should be an okay basketball team, but they're so terrible on the defensive end that they're probably even worse than Iowa.
So as we look at Michigan now over 500 in the league, going into Mackey to play a Purdue team that's lost three straight, one of which came at home. Michigan trending up at this point. How far up do you guys think? I mean, top four in the Big Ten. You think that's a realistic? A realistic landing spot for Michigan to get that double bye.
Is Isaiah Livers going to play the last five games? Yeah. Is he going to get attacked by a poltergeist? I don't know. I'll tell you that if Isaiah Livers is healthy, I feel like Michigan should win every game left on their schedule except Maryland. Not will, but should be more than 50%, and that includes at Ohio State.
And I think they can't. I think with a healthy Livers, they can beat Maryland. I watched Maryland the other night. They're good. They're not a team where you just shake your head and say, "Oh, we can't beat those guys." No, Michigan can beat Maryland, and they can beat them there. But they're going to have to play at the top of their game. They're going to have to get, reasonable officiating, and they're going to have a healthy Isaiah.
And they're going to have to not leave Anthony Cowan open.
And
help off of Anthony Cowan or going into these screens late in the game.
Before we play Maryland, someone's got to tell David DeJulius not to slap the floor.
Yeah, I know.
Before we stop talking about Rutgers, can I talk about my man?
Who's your man?
My man, Jacob Young. Jacob Young.
He's just a super energy guy for them.
Right. He's like the scrub on the playground who's just.
But he's athletic. He's athletic. He's quick. He's tenacious.
I'll give you that. He's quick and tenacious, and he talks so much crap. He talks unbelievable amounts of crap to Xavier Simpson. His line in this game, 2-7 from 2, 0-3 from 3, 0-2 from the line, 1 assist, 1 turnover. He has 30% usage. He scores 4 points.
He's on there for he's on the court for his defense. That's what he's on the court for.
No, he's not. I'll tell you why. Because he gets half their minutes. He's their highest usage guy when he's on the floor. He's shooting 44% from 2. He's shooting 21% from 3. And it just keeps going up. You remember Isaiah Washington from Minnesota?
I do.
He's back. His name is Jacob Young.
But yeah, he was trying to get an X's head, and that's just
he has an 80-0 rating, and he's talking this much?
It's part of his game. It's part of playing defense.
I love him. He's my favorite. He's the best.
They say he hits like double figures or like two. It's like there's no in between for him.
But you have to say, I mean, if you look at these two games, the Indiana game and the Rutgers game, very different games. And Rutgers looks like they know what they're doing on a basketball court. They can't shoot the ball.
Right.
I mean, they're terrible at shooting the ball.
Yeah.
But they do, but they play hard on defense. They go to the boards, and it looks like they have a coach who's trying to maximize the particular abilities that they have. And so,
yeah, there's a reason all these guys are at Rutgers. I mean, yeah. Watching Rutgers is like if the Island of Misfit Toys had a tournament-worthy basketball team.
Very good. Right?
And you just look at that coach and you're like, good job, you're excellent. And then Archie Miller's like, I got some 5 stars and I can't do anything. I mean, I guess they're on the right kind of the cut line, but like.
Well, yeah, they're probably going to make the NCAAs.
I think so. If I was Indiana, I would have fired Archie Miller as soon as John Beilein said something untoward that he didn't mean. I would have been like, ripcord, here we go.
Can you beat Texas to the punch?
Is that what's going to happen?
That's
Texas
the
does
rumor.
Not seem like a great fit.
Well, the rumor from Texas is the... And their blogs is that Beilein is someone they're interested in. So that,
well, I mean, obviously they'd be interested in Beilein. Yeah. I just feel like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, there'd be a longer period, I think, of roster turnover where Texas's roster doesn't look like what Beilein wants his basketball teams to do, and he's 67. So, like, I don't know. I mean, if I'm Texas, I can't tell you it's a bad hire, but I also feel like it might not work out quite as well as you want.
Yeah. Let's go to the, because I want to talk more about Beilein, but let's go to the phones and go out to Cali and talk to Eddie. Eddie, you're on the Michigan Insider. I'm Gold Blog Roundtable. What's up?
Hey, Sam, Roundtable. Greetings from the Golden State, my favorite segment of the week. How you guys doing?
Okay. Good. It's actually like 6:30 out there.
Oh, I get up at 3 o'clock, man.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm watching the game yesterday, and you guys brought up Coach Beilein. The level of sympathy I got for that man in light of the news this week, really, really high. Love that guy. Think about what he did, fellas. He rejuvenated a dead program. And let me tell you, it was dead. Okay, I still shiver thinking about the decade plus of the Brian Ellerbe era, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm wondering is, will the community, do you think the university will at some point have, I don't know, a John Beilein appreciation night?
Yes.
Name the court after him, a statue, a mural, you know, something to just say thank you to this guy. Because he's in his late 60s. He brought this program back, like I just mentioned. He dipped his toes in the NBA waters, and it blew up in the poor guy's face. Not his fault, by the way. And this program isn't even looking back. In fact, it might have turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because I love seeing Juwan on the sideline. I love seeing Jalen right behind him on TV. So do you think the community will do something like that down the road? And I really don't want to see him coach against Michigan, but it might happen. You know, reality, that's just how it works. Hey, man, big weekend for the hockey team. Love the direction of the baseball program. Mm. I'm going to try to catch them out here in Palo Alto and Berkeley. Love the show. Go Blue, baby.
All right, so let's pause. Let's pause because we are late for a break. But ponder the Beilein question: do you think he will coach again? So we will hit that when we come back on the other side. Here we are back, folks. Here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Live here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Matt the Ms. Misler. Other side of the glass. I'm going to blog round table. Craig Ross, Brian Cook. Hey. So guys, John Beilein. Officially stepped down, made it clear that it was his decision to do so, and only 50-plus games into his first season. I am not surprised that he's not finishing out his contract. I never expected him to go all 5 years.
Yeah.
Not surprised by it being a rough transition. I am surprised that he didn't make it through 1 year. Did you think there was a chance he would make it through 1 year?
Well, I read that Athletic article from the Cleveland People, and then I wasn't surprised. Because last year they had an interim the whole year, and the interim didn't want to do it. Which is like, you know, he's an assistant coach. He's going to get a chunk of money.
Who was the interim last year?
I don't remember his name.
Okay.
Larry Drew. Oh, there, I did remember
Larry Drew. Okay, I remember Larry.
And at the All-Star break last year, Larry Drew tried to quit. And he was trying to get them to hire, like, their G League coach for the rest of the year. And they were like, we don't have anyone to coach the G League team then. So he finished out the year after, like, negotiating something with his agent. So, like, this is a culture. I mean, Dan Gilbert owns this team. Comic Sans, Dan. And, like, I'm not surprised. And then you see the details in the article where after the thugs thing, every time beelined around his player. They found songs that about thugs and played them, which is like, okay, that's kind of funny, but also like,
but it's
that's,
not.
That's why you're the Cavs, right? Yeah. You know,
it's funny, but it's not. I mean, it's funny and it's incredibly sad.
Yeah, it's funny in a high school way.
Yeah.
Which is the ironic thing is that all these kids are pretty much in high school.
And so, you know, if you want
to. And they want to be coached like pros. Well, then play like pros. Act like pros.
And, you know, you are unfortunately at the mercy of your overpriced, I call them overpriced, mentally checked out vets. I think he had a chance if he could be the primary influence over the younger guys on his team. It was always going to be difficult. Because those younger guys on the team are often making more than you. But you compound the issues when you got guys like Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. And I'm reading Kevin Love's comments on his way out. Oh, man, this is a big boy move and everyone respects him. I'm like, come on, is it things you say when the guy is out the door, right? Mm-hmm. Things that you weren't saying while that guy was there. And therein lies, to me, a part of the problem. If you really want to focus on these older guys, I mean, on these younger guys, do move heaven and earth to get those vets out of there, as opposed to going and getting Andre Drummond, who he's on in the locker room for a week and says, "Oh well, they bring John Beilein back, I won't resign." Like, give me a break, dude.
I mean, he has a $28 million player option. Is anyone else going to give Andre Drummond $28 million?
No.
No.
Satan himself could be the Cavs coach, and he's taking that player option.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, honestly, John Beilein should have just been like, all right, cool, guys. No more film sessions. No more practice. Let's just roll the ball out. I'm taking the money. You can fire me, but there's no more practice. We're just going to show up at games. I'm giving you everything you want.
See, but this is, again, to me, all of these things, that it would be this kind of train wreck scenario, at least in year one. Until you could get rid of Thompson and Love and guys of that ilk, you're going to have this kind of headache. So I guess that too is surprising to me that he didn't see this. He didn't feel like this is going to be a crap show at least for a year.
Yeah, it's mystifying that he made this choice to me because, I mean, first of all, it's the cadavers. And, I mean, historically, except for the couple of years with LeBron, the worst franchise in the NBA. Secondly, I mean, he had a dreadful roster. I mean, just beyond dreadful. And third, it's moronic management. And so you combine those things, and you're going into a place that makes no sense. Now, think of John Beilein at Michigan. What did he do? He was very careful about choosing players, mm-hmm. not based necessarily on their basketball abilities, or not solely on their basketball abilities, but based on their personalities. I mean, Bakari told me this. I asked him, I think I mentioned this once before, who makes decisions?
Oh, dude. I tell you, you said something that reminds me of a story.
Okay, go ahead.
With BA. And yeah. I can't remember who I went to see. It might have been Josh. It was someone. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Don't tell me who can play. Tell me who can play for Beilein."
Yeah.
Don't tell me who can play. Don't tell me about this guy's a baller. Tell me who can play. For a Beilein.
That's,
which is to your point.
Yeah, and while Bakari told me this while he was an assistant coach here, I said, "Who makes choices on who you bring in?" And he said, "Everybody." And I said, "What do you mean, everybody?" He goes, "Well, secretaries, other players."
Other players, yeah.
He said, "A kid comes in, other players don't like him, Beilein might not take him. Kid comes in here and is rude to a secretary, Beilein's, I don't want a kid who's rude to the secretary." And so... You know, and I don't think Bakari was exaggerating. And so, to a large extent, Beilein had a choice over the sort of person he brought into the program. And it had to be the sort of person who could fit within the Beilein culture. Well, it seems to me, if you're going to go to Cleveland, you'd want to go there in advance and talk to those blockheads, each one of them, and see what the hell you have. And I don't think he probably did that, but I think he should have known he was walking into a viper pit.
Yeah, I just feel like if Popovich got hit by a bus, or Spoelstra got hit by a bus, or Kerr got hit by a bus, and for whatever reason, John Beilein became the new head coach of any of those three franchises, he'd be fine.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because those are franchises that aren't the cadavers. You know, they're not a zombie franchise, but Cleveland is. And so it made no sense. Talking to Brad Stevens should, you know,
But the Celtics, like he's with the Celtics. He's like, this is a professional organization with professional people in.
Right.
All NBA franchises are probably like this.
Right.
Because they're billion-dollar enterprises. And I'm like, no, there's the Washington Redskins, there's the Cleveland Cavaliers, there's the Detroit Lions, there's half of baseball. It's not even trying to win. Yeah. Many of these organizations are completely diseased. And the Cavaliers, I mean, I just can't, like, there's a guy who's an assistant in the NBA who's going to get, like, $1 million extra or $2 million extra for 1 year as an interim coach, and he's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, you know, Steve Clark made a great point. When he was on yesterday, he said, you know, he traded one set of stresses for another. I think he thought he was trading down in stress.
That's what they tell you.
And
you don't have to recruit.
And it just was not the case for him. But which brings me back to my original question to you guys. Do you think that he's done because the stresses that he left behind? Look. Michigan obviously was not a bad situation. Michigan was a great situation. He turned it into a national power.
And he had a good roster coming back.
Absolutely.
Iggy and Poole, regardless.
He had a really good coaching staff.
He had a good coaching staff, and he had
His recruiting, he was recruiting top 100 guys, maybe not five-star one-and-dones.
No, it'd be this roster, but it'd also have Jalen Wilson.
Right. So, I mean, he had guys, man, and a machine kind of set up, but you had the recruiting stress intensify with now you got the transfer portal. He's having more guys dabble in the NBA and to the point now where even the guys that you're telling, you know, you shouldn't go, you'll probably be a G League guy. And they say, well, so what? I'll go be a G League guy. It's like, damn it, I got to deal with that. Then you look around and wait, they rung Bill Self up. You look around and it looks like they rung Patino up. I mean, they identified all these head coaches, right? And then when push comes to shove, none of those guys get anything.
Nothing.
And so you got that, and then you got the health thing. You got the health thing. So I think it was all of those things together that kind of led him to go to the NBA. Those things aren't going away. They're still the same. Still got the transfer portal.
Yeah.
You still have to deal with guys and being in the draft and waiting for them to make a decision before you can settle your roster.
I don't know. He could have retired in place if he wanted to. Pulling the ripcord here makes me think that he wants to have a different job.
But and then he just said, I was worried about how this stress was going to affect my health long term.
That's not true.
Really?
I mean, he might think that, but like people tell themselves things and that's not. Like, I tell myself things that aren't true.
Like what?
I don't want to say it on the radio.
But he actually has had, heart issues, though.
I know, but, like, how stressful is it to be Northwestern's coach? I mean, if you're Chris Collins, it's real stressful.
Yeah.
If you're John Beilein, not that stressful.
But he just said losing is stressful for me.
Well, you know.
I mean,
he'll do less of it than he does in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, losing is going to be stressful on a team that won, 15 games last year? You think he's going to take that roster and all of a sudden win 50? No. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, this comes down to some extent to the Lord of the Rings line about orcs. The orc that you fear is much worse than the orc that you hear.
I thought you were just going with the whole
my brushes.
Okay, Gollum is not an orc.
In any event,
he's a hobbit been corrupted. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I know.
You know?
I know.
It's not like you know.
I know. I've watched the series, but I'm just like,
there are books, Miz. There are books.
That's actually pretty good. That was a great Gollum,
man.
Wow. Yeah, all right.
You have a future.
All right, Miz and I are good again.
Anyway, I don't get it. I mean, and the truth is, Beilein, if he stepped back from it for a second, and I think he should have, and maybe talked to Greg Harden about this, if he'd step back from it for a second, I mean, he's an icon in Ann Arbor.
Right.
He was a hero. On the national scene, even other coaches, you know, revered John Beilein. I mean, there was nothing for him to be stressed about. He could have mediocre teams in Ann Arbor for the rest of his career
and be fine.
Yeah. You know, and so it was an illogical move, and he should have come in and said, "What is the MGO roundtable for?"
Honestly, that would solve a lot of problems.
He didn't have to ask me. He obviously didn't ask me what I thought.
Including certain...
he knew what I thought about the Pistons.
Yeah.
So he had to know what I would think about the Cavs.
Yeah, it becomes more than doubled with the Cavs versus the Pistons.
Right. All right. We need to get one more break in because I got to get you guys' thoughts on... It was an amazing weekend across the board for Michigan athletics. And you look at baseball specifically... And it feels like the ride is starting all over,
yeah.
Man, with this team this year.
Yeah.
Eric Bakich, dude.
You know, speaking of this, I've heard rumors that even though I turned down $2.8 million from WTKA, that they're going to offer me $5.5 million. I'll probably accept that.
Oh, yeah, and we definitely have to get into the, I got to get you guys, we don't have enough time in today's show. Right. Let me get this break in real quick. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA.
Baseball.
Online at WTK.com. See, I don't want to shortchange baseball with a 5-minute conversation. All right, good. I think that they are, you know, I said before, I feel like the ride is starting over. That was a riveting weekend of baseball. And you can just really see the becoming phenomena maybe is too strong a word, but you can certainly see the culture kind of having taken hold, where you can plug in some new guys that we didn't know, guys who hadn't hit a home run. Matchman hadn't hit a home run, Craig, and he comes in the ninth inning
and hits a two-run homer
and crushes one
to beat the number one or two team in the country,
the defending national champs. I don't want to shortchange
number one.
I don't want to shortchange them with discussing them in 5 minutes. I will shortchange Michigan State. So what about this Mark D'Antonio? You know, it wasn't me.
Did Mark D'Antonio lie about something?
I mean, this guy. So here's the thing. You remember Mark D'Antonio? He had the stormtrooper moment, midfield. He claimed he didn't know. I have no idea. I have no idea what happened. They said, Mark, you were there. He said, miss.
Wasn't me.
Exactly. Turns out there was a camera that caught Mark D'Antonio red-handed. Maybe that he can use that as evidence in this case to show that he loses track. He doesn't know when he's certain places.
He has Urban Meyer disease.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that grounds counselor, you know, for defense? That sometimes I'm places and I just don't remember I'm at these places.
That's a bad defense.
That would explain his assistant coach rotation, though. Just walks in one day and he points to some guy and he's like, "Are you the quarterback's coach?"
Wasn't me.
Maybe he learned this from Izzo. It's the weird guys defense.
A lot of weird guys right here.
I got a lot of weird guys. I don't know. They stuck me with all these coaches. I have no idea who they are, or where they came from.
Trying to reinvent your team on the frickin' bench.
Wasn't me.
You gotta love Tom Izzo. I hope Tom Izzo coaches forever. I really do. But what kind of exposure is there for him? So it's very clear. But you said there's no criminal exposure.
Yeah, in the break, I don't.
Joe said there's no criminal exposure.
Oh, he did. Okay, I'm glad because he would know better than me.
But what about in just in the civil suit? I mean, his attorneys have been accused of bad behavior, but they wanted this lawsuit thrown out for what they said were frivolous claims. Clearly, Blackwell's claims, at least this one, wasn't frivolous.
Well, I mean, the thing the plaintiffs have going for him now is that D'Antonio clearly lied in his deposition. I mean, not only do you have the photograph of Blackwell,
a sworn affidavit.
Yeah, you have a sworn affidavit, and you have eyewitness testimony of the people involved saying, "Yeah, he was here eating breakfast with us," or whatever they did. And so, there's no question that D'Antonio lied in his affidavit, which is something the plaintiffs can use there in his deposition, which means it's something the plaintiffs can use going forward, that, well, you lied here. When can we trust the single word that you say?
I don't know
when there's contradictory
evidence. I don't know how he walked into this. I knew about this. I knew about this.
You knew about
the Dalen Hayes visit.
You knew that Blackwell was there?
And the picture. Yeah, okay. I knew about it. It's like, how can you?
You'll probably get called as a witness.
How can you walk into this, dude? Wow. Anyway.
I mean, I don't know why he just didn't say, yeah, we made a mistake. And he was there,
right.
And the hate.
Take the minor hit.
Right.
Well, he's used to the Michigan State press corps, who would just be like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I like that."
Yeah, I mean, they know nothing except circle the wagons.
Right. Which, clearly they are. Because they're buying this tin hat thing. They think, oh, well, the sun doesn't shine in Michigan that time of year. Yeah. And oh, he's wearing shorts, so clearly this and look how much bigger Curtis Blackwell is than everyone else in the picture. This is a Photoshop. That's what Michigan State fans, some, are saying right
most.
Now. Anyway, we got to get out of here. Let's close it out with Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, make it quick, man.
I am pumped up. I want to give a big congrats out to the Michigan men's and the Michigan women's basketball teams for winning last night. And it is two awesome days till Michigan plays Purdue. And all I want to say, what a great day to be a Michigan Wolverine. To the football, to the basketball, to the baseball, to the women's basketball, to the gymnastics, to the swimming, to the tennis, to the golf, to et cetera. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue. Winner, lose. One game, one play, one moment at a time. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
He dropped an et cetera this week, Miz.
So many to get right in there.
Right.
He does it.
Great job, as always, man. Appreciate your time.
Better than I-